Paper 26, section 7, which is old single column, page 292. All right. So remember, we got started last week on the secondary Saprophim. Those high angels that are the offspring of the master spirits. And they divide themselves up into seven different groups to, one group for each of the circles of Havona, each of the circuits of Havona. And, we're looking at it primarily, as everything in the Revelation is oriented in terms of the ascenders, mortal ascenders coming up and in through Havona, so starting with the seventh circuit and moving into the first. But remember, always in play, and we'll see it coming up again tonight, you have the descenders going from the first to the seventh circuit, coming down from the Isle of Paradise, the Paradise citizens. And in terms of the ascenders, we got the pilgrim helpers and then the supremacy guides on the sixth circuit. And does everyone remember, so having graduated onto the sixth circuit, what stage spirit is an ascender at that point?
Fourth.
Just remember, you have one stage for each of the super universe levels. So you have 1, 2, 3. And so then that first one that you're hitting in Havona is fourth stage. You're a graduate spirit, because remember, you graduated from the spiritual womb of your master spirit. So you're now in relationship to reality above that, at least in part, above that sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. And you're really starting to work on that with the supremacy guides in that higher common domain of relationship to reality. And before we start reading, let's just notice an initial curiosity with the titles of the sections, in other words, the names of these groups. As you flip forward to section 8 and 9, you see what you'd expect. You see something involving the Son and something involving the Father, the Son finders and the Father guides. Why isn't this next group we're going to read, why aren't they the Spirit guides? Why isn't it Spirit, Son, Father? That should immediately catch your attention before you read anything. You'll see as soon as we get into it. What I've been stressing, over and over again as we've been going through all these last several papers, you have this very fundamental relationship between the Paradise Trinity and the Infinite Spirit that is the generator for all the beings that we're reading about, that fundamental relationship between the two. And that relationship is totally fundamental. It's not just relative to bringing the whole sort of fundamental structure of beings into existence. It's fundamental to your relationship to the Spirit, the Son, the Father. You can't get to the Spirit except through the Trinity. So, just remind yourself, as we start to read, what these Saprophim are attempting to bring you into relationship to on Paradise, where this fact that about that the Trinity, then the Spirit, then the Son, then the Father, that's literal at the center of the Isle of Paradise. At the very center is the presence of the Father, but that presence is completely enshrouded in the presence of the Son. And that presence is completely enshrouded in the presence of the Spirit. And that presence is completely enshrouded in the presence of the functioning of the Trinity. Specifically, the Trinity of Absoluteness is there present you know, the functioning of the Trinity on the absolute level. So there's no way to get to that immediate presence and any experience of it, of even the Spirit, except through the Trinity. You can't, there's no going around. It goes all, you know, it's completely enshrouded. No matter where you are on the aisle, there's the Trinity. That's all you can see. That's all you can immediately experience. So you have to be able to penetrate the Trinity, come into a significant enough relationship that you can sort of, you know, melt into that presence. And then within that presence, there's the next presence available to you of the Spirit. So, you know, that... Again, it's because that the and you'll see it, you know, they really are trying to get you to recognize that between the lines, you know, because it's not something that you're going to immediately understand as a new reader. But I want to really put that forward because that'll allow you to appreciate right up front what's going on, you know, and you can see it should immediately, you know, if you're an observant reader. You know, the titles should immediately catch your question. It's like, it catch your attention. What? Why on earth am I not seeing the Spirit here? Like I'm expecting from sort of a seven absolutes of infinity, you know, sort of picture or something like that. To really understand this, you've got to begin to move beyond. You definitely have to have the Trinity in play. Okay, so they guided you into a realization of supremacy. Now they're going to guide you into a relationship with the Trinity. So let's see what they've got for us here.
Seven, the Trinity guides. Trinity guides are the tireless ministers of the fifth circle of the Havana training of the advancing pilgrims of time and space. The spiritual graduates are here designated candidates for the deity adventure. Since it is on this circle, under the direction of the Trinity guides, that the pilgrims receive advanced instruction concerning the divine Trinity in preparation for the attempt to achieve the personality recognition of the infinite Spirit. And here the ascending pilgrims discover what true study and real mental effort mean as they begin to discern the nature of the still more taxing and far more arduous spiritual exertion that will be required to meet the demands of the high goal set for their achievement on the worlds of this circuit.
Okay, several things in there. I mean, perhaps let's just, you know, notice how emphatic they were at the end there. I mean, you know, how many times have we been noticing this? The kind of effort that eternity holds. I mean, it's endless effort. And, you know, you think you've really exerted getting this far, and they say, well, no, now you're going to actually figure out what true study and real mental effort are. Still more taxing, far more arduous.
Good relief, Chris, is the last one, compliments of rest.
Well, we'll talk about how the name belies what happens on that circuit, however. The slope is never steeper there. So, you know, it's just, you know, they're trying to get you to come to terms, you know, in your day-to-day life with the fact that if you seek a path in your life that avoids difficulty, are you going towards God or 180 degrees away? The direction that points towards God is upslope. If you're rolling down the hill, you're rolling away from God. If you don't have to exert to hold your position, even, you're moving away from God. You're rolling down the hill. Material gravity is pulling you down the hill and away from God. Every step you get closer to God is by wholehearted choice to lift your foot and lift it, you know, up that hill, to go up that hill. So there's that. And then I'm not going to point it out every single time they say it. I want you to point it out. Candidates for the deity adventure. Okay? You'll notice if you start looking for that, it's almost, you know, ridiculous. Every other sentence. Oh, did I mention deity adventure. Oh, by the way, did I say deity adventure? Oh, did I mention deity? I mean, they're just really pounding that. This is not a God adventure you're on here. This is a deity adventure. It's something higher than a God adventure. Think about this first step. Like, you know, you saw it right there, that the Trinity guides, the pilgrims receive advanced instruction concerning the divine Trinity in preparation for the attempt to achieve the personality recognition of the infinite spirit. Okay, so let's just maybe notice that last part first. It's like, wait a minute. I've gotten this figured out now. I know that when they say the infinite spirit, they're talking about the impersonal aspect of the third source and center. What do they mean, personality recognition? Okay, well, one step at a time. First step is coming into relationship with the Paradise Trinity, which is not a person. It's just deity. And then through that impersonal deity, that is the Paradise Trinity, you have a relationship to the impersonal aspect of the third source and center, the infinite spirit. And then from there, you can attempt to get a relationship to the conjoint actor, the personal aspect of the third source and center. So there's many steps here, see? You know, it's through the impersonal side, if you will, of the third source and center that you're going to gain access to the personal side. And the only way to gain access to the impersonal side is through the Paradise Trinity. Because the Paradise Trinity is the only facet of deity that directly engages the totality of reality of which you're made. You're part of reality. You're not deity. It's the only thing that directly touches you. So all doorways to higher things are through the Trinity. It's the only thing that engages reality directly. So that's the process. Try to let that really sink in about how, you know, the story that they're giving you here is just a lot different than what you would have expected coming from evolutionary religion, or even coming from an initial relationship with the fifth epical revelation and trying to expand your monotheistic God into the seven absolutes of infinity. This fact that you have to go beyond religion to get to paradise. Deity is a philosophic fact. You know, God is the religious fact. But the super additive, when you bring true science and true religion together, that super additive fact is deity. Okay? And that's what they're, you know, like I've tried to point out, that's the thing that it really starts to sink in, that so much of the fifth epical revelation is trying to teach you that God starts you, but the pathway all the way there, and even when you're there, you know, notice how they will say, you know, the Son instead of the eternal Son, or they'll say the Father instead of the universal Father. They'll use the name for the deity, not the being, over and over again.
Yeah, you know, I'm listening to what you're saying. It's, you know, everyone sort of says, "Oh my God," you know. But I'm reminded that a couple of things. One is, you know, you can't really conceive of it with the mind that we are conceiving, reading it with. Because we're going to have a different mind, and we'll all be fused with a part of God within us by that time as well, which has got to make a difference in how,
yes, it will,
how we tackle these issues, yeah, so to speak.
And to that point, you know, let that sink in. What John is making a really valid point. What that should tell you upon reflection is, in order to really be setting my sights on paradise, I need to set my sights above and beyond anything that I can immediately imagine. I need to not be satisfied with anything that I can currently really sort of literally put in front of myself and get my hands on. I want to be hungry for that which I do not yet know, not satisfied with that which I currently have. Never be satiated in this, you know, in your relationship to God, deity, reality, always be hungry, because always be knowing that there's infinitely more beyond what you can currently see, and that is more interesting than what you can currently see. And you desire that which you do not yet know above all things. Yeah. If you can, you know, if you really, you know, set that to yourself, it changes the way you live your day-to-day life. You know, you're always doing things with a higher perspective, a bigger picture in mind. The lowliest of things are transformed by having insight that goes beyond what's immediately visible to the sight. That's the key. Your three insights, you know, like one of the ways we pictured that insight thing literally is if we take the infinite eternal ellipse and flip it upside down here so that the deity that engages us in the fifth functional level here, you know, imagine we're standing here. Okay, and we look to the horizons in either direction. Okay? And if you look to the horizon this direction, as far as you can see at the edge of the horizon is the universal father. If you're going to have any relationship to the first two functional levels, you have to have insight. You have to be able to see beyond where you can see directly by sight. You can see the Father by sight at its best. But to go to the first source and center, to go to the Trinity, a relationship to the aisle, like we're talking about trying to come into the relationship, that requires something that cannot be seen. It requires being able to see below the horizon, you know. Same way, you know, you can get to the Supreme, but to go beyond the Supreme, to get to the ultimate, you have to have insight, not just sight.
In working on the paper that we're doing for the other class, I ran across a quote that one of these Greek philosophers talked about the unseen real versus the unreal seen. Which I thought was...
Right.
Interesting to contemplate.
And just to know that there must be an unseen real. I mean, the step that humans were taking when they had when they used their three cosmic intuitions for the first time to know that the only way the universe could be logical is if there was an unseen real. Otherwise, it just couldn't be. And so again, This is what we're working on cultivating. That's what the revelators are trying to get us to reawaken, is some of these fundamental recognitions and how that transforms the simplest of things in your day-to-day life. When you see that which is not immediately visible as you walk your day-to-day life. Things you can see. Values you can only see with insight. You know, it takes insight to recognize values. All right.
Most faithful and efficient are the Trinity guides, and each pilgrim receives the undivided attention and enjoys the whole affection of a secondary supernifim belonging to this order. Never would a pilgrim of time find the first approachable person of the Paradise Trinity were it not for the help and assistance of these guides and the host of other spiritual beings engaged in instructing the ascenders respecting the nature and technique of the forthcoming deity adventure.
It's a deity adventure again. Oops, I reminded you of it. a little thing here. Just, you know, when you see them say never, for instance, you know, or must, you know, pause and reflect about the consequences of that. It's not just, wow, am I grateful in advance that there's these beings that are going to help me, because I could never do it on my own. But think about what that means about right now. What's the truth in that statement? Can they help you with the consecration of your will? No. You have absolute free will. Not to mention, you know, sort of the prime directive afoot in the cosmos of, you know, not interfering with the exercise of free will. So the never part, it's not about the consecration of will. After all, remember, we got that perfected in order to get into Havana in the first place. It's about this consecration of the mind thing again, see? Never can you will you be able to achieve this level of consecration of mind without lots and lots of very precise, experienced help. You can do the will thing pretty much on your own. Yeah, so that's an important thing when we talk about this dual consecration that you're striving for, to appreciate that you can't just sit there and try to somehow invoke that consecration of mind, alone in the monastery, say, or in your bedroom or wherever. You have to engage lots of things and lots of beings. You have to get involved in the origin, the history, the destiny, relationship. You have to try to comprehend the whole. And the bigger the whole that you can get your mind wrapped around, the more success you'll have. Until you get at this level, when they say it's far still more taxing and far more arduous, you had no idea your mind could even stretch that far to comprehend, to wrap around. If you try to stretch it that far, it's going to go beyond the elastic limit, and it's just going to go all droopy on me. And it's going to be the end of me. You can't stretch me that far. It's like, no, you can. But it's going to take lots of equivalent on the high here of caloric intake. Even though you're long past having to eat material food here, you still will get totally drained, and it'll have to go recharge your batteries up there. All right, so this is, just to appreciate that, see, it's all about this consecration of mind.
What I like about that sentence, though, because I'm a very affectionate person, I like the fact that they're going to give us their undivided attention,
right,
and their whole affection. Right. So while we're going through right. this, as long as you have somebody that's standing beside you, no matter how hard the road is to go, you can make it because you have that support and that love, and affection is very important. So I think that's wonderful. I'm happy about that.
And besides each of these secondary supernafim that are right there?
What?
Yeah. Besides those secondary supernafim that are right there with that undivided attention and that whole affection, don't forget there's another individual that is going with you as you go from one type of secondary supernafim to the next. Who's guiding you across? The graduate guy, who is giving you, an even more transcendent, undivided attention and whole affection. His attention and affection transcends the circuits of Avona. It's so intimate. Okay? So, yes. And they're just reminding you, that's not just because you know how wonderful that will feel, how reassuring it'll be to have that person with you there. It's indispensable, just functionally, too. If you weren't that close to those beings, you couldn't achieve this consecration of mind. You just could not do that. You can't do this level of consecration of mind on your own. Because in the end, when you get to eternity, this consecration of mind culminates not in the I am, a singular fact that you as an individual with your will can consecrate to. It culminates in the infinite all are. You can't do that by yourself. By definition, see? Yeah. One more here.
After the completion of the course of training on this circuit the Trinity guides take their pupils to its pilot world and present them before one of the many triune commissions functioning as examiners and certifiers of candidates for the deity adventure. These commissions consist of one fellow of the finaliters, one of the directors of conduct of the Order of Primary Supernafim, and either a solitary messenger of space or a trinitized son of paradise. When an ascendant soul actually starts for paradise, he is accompanied only by the transit trio, the superaphic circle associate, the graduate guide, and the ever-present servital associate of the latter. These excursions from the Havona circuits to paradise are trial trips. The ascenders are not yet of paradise status. They do not achieve residential status on paradise until they have passed through the terminal rest of time, subsequent to the attainment of the Universal Father and the final clearance of the Havona circuits. Not until after the divine rest did they partake of the essence of divinity and the spirit of supremacy, and thus really begin to function in the circle of eternity and in the presence of the Trinity.
Okay, a few things there. Notice, you know, I knew this was coming, and I did, but I didn't want to, you know, give it all away. Who else is there besides the graduate guy? There's also a servital that's right there. You have this threefold companionship on every circuit, two beings of which go transcend the circuits. Okay, see, and they, those three, go with you to paradise. You know, these three times, you attempt to find the Spirit, and then the Son, and then the Father. So they're companions transcending even the circuits of Havona. They're also companions on paradise, and indispensable to that process. Okay, so now one of the things they're throwing in here. Now, actually, before I do that, just notice that last thing again: the circle of eternity and the presence of the Trinity. Again, just stressing that that's where it all begins. You have to begin in the presence of the Trinity. You've come up. You remember the personality and spirit attributes of the Supreme Being are derived from the Paradise Trinity. So you have that relationship to supremacy. So through supremacy, you then can get access more directly to the Trinity, and that's what you're first attempting to achieve. What they're saying there at the end, a literal, definitive experience in the presence of the Trinity, not to the side of the presence of the Trinity, but in it. Okay, that's what it's all about. And they're giving you a little. There's some technical things. The reason they have that, in quotes, the essence of divinity and the spirit of supremacy. There's a lot of complicated technical things that you can unpack and understand about the development of your relationship to the existential levels and the experiential levels. And I don't want to go into all that complex detail, but they're referring to those details there. That there's both a relationship to the finite and to the supreme levels going on in this process. The key thing to just appreciate that, that's sort of up front, that demands these details behind the scenes that we're not going to unpack. You know where you're trying to get to. You're trying to achieve residential status on the Isle of Paradise. A holy existential domain and an absolute domain at that. The only way to do that is for you to achieve a first measure of direct relationship to the absolute existential level, the circle of eternity. You have to achieve that. I mean, that's why the climb and the circuits is so steep. There's a number of things, other things with these levels that is taxing too. But just think about, you know, even setting all of the experiential achievement aside, the relationship to existential reality that you have to achieve in order to be able to have the full experience of engaging this existential domain. You have to achieve a direct relationship with the absolute existential level in order to do this. And that's what they're, you know, this whole bit about when you're taking this first trip and to try to find the Spirit, you know, you don't even remotely have that yet. You're going to have very, very little experiential relationship with the Isle. It's going to seem mostly empty to you when you go there that first time, and even the second and the third times. You know, even when you find the Father, the Isle is still going to be almost devoid of experience, because you've got a lot of work yet to do before you can actually engage it at that absolute existential level that you must have in order to, you know, mind is absolute on now the paradise. If you're going to have a mind over relationship, you got to get up all the way up there. Huge climb, and that's what they're alluding to there. But it's a process that started way, way back. Clear back, let me just give you one little hint about the existential thing. When did you have your first relationship to the finite existential level? When personality engaged you from the existential father, that gave you your first measure of relationship, of direct relationship to the finite existential level. And you can say, I am.
What age was that?
Roughly age 6, you know, on average, is when you that personality first engages. You know, before that, you have finite, you know, relationship to finite experiential, the finite experiential level, but no direct relationship to the finite existential level. You, at that point, the Father, from what the Father has done, you can say, I am. I, you know, existential. The verb to be, I am. Okay, that's, so it starts there, roughly age 6, that you have that relationship to the finite existential level. And you're now thinking all the way to the end point, taking that relationship to those existential levels. You got to go up through supreme, absonite, ultimate, co-absolute, absolute. You got to climb all the way up those existential levels, plus all the experiential stuff you got to do to make that happen, in order to begin. Just to begin to function in the circle of eternity and in the presence of the Trinity. Because like I said, that presence that's on the aisle that completely enshrouds the Spirit, it's not the presence of the individual, the Paradise Trinity. It's the presence of the functioning of the Paradise Trinity. And which functioning is it? Is it, you know, most fundamentally, is it the Trinity of Supremacy? Trinity of Ultimacy? No, it's the Trinity of Absoluteness. You know, that's the presence you're talking about. Again, you're not going to have a relationship to the Trinity of Absoluteness, that existential fact, until you have a relationship, direct relationship to the absolute existential level.
When the ascended soul actually starts to paradise, so is that kind of like going off and visiting in college before you go, so to speak, from the fifth circle, and they sort of giving you a taste? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, see, I mean...
I kind of understand that, but I mean, I'm just wondering,
don't
say mention much about it before they sort of drop that sentence.
Like I was saying, you have the whole issue that this is just a visitor trip, technically, no residential status. The thing they're really stressing immediately there, you know, about the way that is worded, when an ascended soul actually starts. I mean, they're talking about, you know, you're interacting with zillions of beings. But then comes that moment when you're going to actually think about going, and you're going to get in Supernafimed and go there. At that point, the whole universe boils down to you and three other beings. You know, when, you know, actually starts, all there is you and those three beings. You know, sort of, and like I was saying, you're really going to experience how it's just the four of you when you get to paradise. And you really don't have any experiences except, okay, I'm here, and there's the three of you, and I see that glowing off in the distance. Now what? Okay? They're stressing that. That's what I'm saying. For a little while, your universe is going to boil down to just four beings, you and three others. And the three of you together, in intimate, you know, relationship, are going to attempt this amazing feat of penetrating the Trinity and touching the personality of the Infinite Spirit.
Dorothy, getting to Oz.
Right?
So they've done
yeah.
it before.
Yeah, it's been done countless times. But
okay, question.
Mm-hmm.
Two questions, yeah. Actually. You know which ones I'm going to go for.
Okay, all right.
Because of my simple mind. Okay, what is the pilot? Where is the pilot world?
Okay, so we, you know, even though all seven circuits are from our perspective, just a string of pearls, you know, with no special point. They tell you there is a special point in the absinthe geometry of Havona. It's from a finite perspective, there's no difference between all the worlds around a circuit. But from an absinthe geometric perspective, there's a first world. There's a pilot world. There's the world. So you, each world, you start on that pilot world, that special world, that first world. You go all the way around, and you end up back on that world to either go to the next circuit or to go to paradise on one of these journeys. It's the, you know, it's the launching point, you know, and receiving point of each circuit, that pilot world.
And secondly, I guess the rest, the terminal rest of time, I guess that would mean that no longer would you be, after you wake up, you would no longer be in time?
Yes, right. You're going from time to eternity. Okay. Yeah, and that in itself, see, it really reminds you, yeah, I mean, for people who maybe can't hear that, she's asking about going. Yeah, are you not going to be in time anymore when you get to the Isle of Paradise? And the answer is, yeah, yes, you won't be anymore. You're literally going from time to eternity, and in a way that humans have never thought of before, really. You know, our first thought about eternity is there's this long line that we call time, and we go scampering down it until we get to the, you know, remote, infinitely distant end of it, and we call that eternity. Well, I mean, that's experiential eternity, okay? And the revelators will call that future eternity. And the one at the other end, they'll call past eternity. This is not experiential eternity. This is existential eternity. You can go from an experiential relationship with sequence that we call time, in one way or another, out of that, into a domain where there isn't any experiential sequence that you could call time anymore. You go to a timeless, quote-unquote, domain, a domain where there's still sequence, but it's not experiential, it's existential, it just is. It always has been, always will be. There is this existential sequence that is just there. You step into it. You know, and if you don't have that level of existence, you have nothing to do there. They stick you in one point of that existential place, and you can't get to the next point unless you have absolute existential sequence consciousness. You can't take a step on the aisle, like in the sense you think of it now, unless you are the next step.
But since everything there has always been and always will be, how can you be inserted into it? That must mean that you then always were and always will be.
Right. Yeah. See, the only beings that can be on the Isle of Paradise are those that are there not just in existential eternity, but also in experiential eternity, who are eternalizers. You know, you are in eternity if you're there. It's just you can't experience that yet. You know, you are in experiential eternity. You are an eternal lighter there. You just can't experience that yet. But the fact that you can exist there in full fashion is proof to you that one day, after endless cycles of eternity, you will be that eternal lighter. Otherwise, you couldn't be there now. In other words, your relationship to it then, you know, when you're there, is a downstepped expression of your relationship to it at the end of all things. In some, see, amazing way. This is fascinating to try to think about. You know, it's an antecedent following, see. You have now become this amazing antecedent following, just like the Supreme Being. You're there before you are.
Tommy had a question.
Yeah. Yep.
Would you, if in some sort of manner, were to find a way to, per se, somehow break the system, you could say, find a way to be able to basically find yourself there, prerequisite to your time? Or would you just like explode into a thousand?
No. They point that out. They could snatch you up right now and haul you off and plop you on the Isle of Paradise. Okay? But you would have absolutely no experience.
So it would be just a void to you.
It would be an infinite nothing. There would be nothing there except your self-consciousness. You would have not one single shred of sensory input, nothing. Because literally, and this is an appropriate use of the word absolutely, you have absolutely no relationship to what's there right now. I mean, and like I'm saying, even when you're starting to go to find these persons, you have just the first little shred of relationship. You have some supreme relationship, but you don't have that absolute fact yet. So, yeah, it's not like if they put you there, you would evaporate right now.
Michael,
unless you have some really solid integrity, I wouldn't suggest trying it because you'll probably go insane. But if you imagine you had the integrity, they just plopped you there, suddenly there would be nothing in the universe. Absolutely nothing except your thoughts. Because you cannot, there's no way that your inner life can establish any relationship to the outer life. You do not have that kind of an inner life that can reach out and touch that outer life. And so there's nothing but your inner life there.
Yeah, I'm Scott. I'm losing my voice a little bit. But if Jesus Christ broke his body, right, and apart, and the only connection that he had with us into the world was, some electronic means, obviously, through our synapse, in the way that we think, obviously, the way that the Lord offers our heart,
Right. Those sorts of thoughts about how we have a relationship to such remote things that we're speaking of here, even now, even with a faint flicker of faith, is what I was saying, in perhaps a cryptic speak, that even as a six-year-old, you had your first measure of relationship to that which just is, to that which goes beyond experiences. That even as that little child of God, you can reach out and transcend all this time. You can absolutely know that you are absolutely loved by God who just is, with no long span of time required, none of this arduous task and stuff. What you're doing is all this arduous task is taking that incredible gift of grace that was given to you as a little child that allowed you to touch the end from the beginning, and actually walking that whole distance that grasp bridged as that child of God. You reached across all this and took a hold of it. Well, if you reach across and take a hold, God reciprocates and reaches back and takes a hold of you, and he begins to draw you to him. You begin to on a long walk towards God, and you begin to actually realize in your experience all that you foreshadowed in that first grasp is a faint flicker of faith, child of God. It all begins in very simple but amazing terms. That's what we're really trying to just wrap our minds around, just what an incredibly profound thing it is for a little child to know that they're a child of God. What an incredible gulf they are reaching across, and what a profound thing they're touching. Is it not surprising when you really let it sink in how grand that is to actually take that journey? In fact, it's going to be a long journey, but an amazing one.
Just to reinforce what you're saying there, when he got his adjuster, all of a sudden he started talking about my God does, you know, my God.
Let's just draw upon, you know, as we get back into the story here, let's just draw upon that, you know, that first simple, sincere expression of a relationship to God, my God. Because, you know, that's one of the magnificent things about your relationship to the Universal Father. In that relationship, there are only two beings, you and the Father. Remember, he doesn't relate to beings collectively. He relates to an infinite number of beings individually, solely. He has only an individual relationship to you. So you think of how there's a spirit of that just in the way this journey is beginning to play out. You go to the aisle, and it's like you're in this tunnel, you know? And it's that tunnel that really, where all there is ultimately in that tunnel is you at one endpoint and the Father at the other end. And you're trying to penetrate through that tunnel. When you actually get there, it's like, well, actually, I got to go through the Trinity and through the Spirit and through the Son to actually get to the end of the tunnel. But see, it is that singular individual relationship that you're pursuing. And it's playing out now in the, you know, in the way you experience the outer life. Instead of just being a metaphor that it's like this tube that, you know, between you and the Father, you're there on the aisle, and it's like, well, there isn't anyone here. All I can see is, you know, that's going to be kind of your initial experience, you know, because that's what you're trying to culminate, is that what started, you know, when he said that. My God, you're trying to get to the end of that little tube. And once you do that, then you begin to go beyond that. That's a new beginning. And then, you know, it'll culminate finally when you go to the aisle as a resident and have this experience of this whole vast outer life that's there. It's not just you in that individual relationship.
Would it be correct in my assumption of this? So we're created, we have the personality that God has given us. So that personality is already over there in paradise. It's just waiting for us to catch up, kind of.
Right. Right. I mean, you can think of the top end of it is already there. The bottom end, you know, the finite part has reached all the way down, and you're trying to work your way up to that absolute end. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Because remember, it has seven dimensions. One absolute, three absolute, three finite.
Well, the cool thing to me is that it's hard to fathom who you are at that point.
Yeah, and I guess all I would say that before we get back to reading, just to stress, it's for those who were just talking. You know, John was just asking, for those who are on the webinar, about this issue of how different we will be then than now, and just to stress, remember from the Father's perspective, there's no difference between potentiality and actuality. They're equally real to the Father, not to us. So what we're attempting to do here, in a sense, in trying to wrap our mind around these ideas that are so remote, so beyond anything that is the actuality of us yet, but it is the potentiality of us yet. And that potentiality is just as real to the Father as your actuality. Start to think, you know, in those terms, that what you will be is already.
Yeah, because it really is.
Yeah, because it really is.
Because,
you know,
what we talked about earlier,
don't limit yourself to this absolutely linear, finite, temporal sense of yourself. What you will be is. Live each day knowing that it really is. Not just pretending that it is, but you know, it is. Know that. Live that kind of a life. I mean, that's what gives you peace that passes all understanding. When you live your full potentiality instead of your mere actuality, you know, as a little finite being like we are right now, you are the actuality of you is the smallest of little corks in the biggest of oceans. You can't live that actuality you will flounder and fail. But your potentiality, which is an infinite plane. It will not sink in the largest of oceans. You know? That's the peace that passes all understanding. Jesus lived, you know, in that fact of eternity, not of time. Eternalize your thought more and more every day. All right, let's get some more here.
The ascender's companions of the transit trio are not required to enable him to locate the geographic presence of the spiritual luminosity of the Trinity. Rather, to afford all possible assistance to a pilgrim in his difficult task of recognizing, discerning, and comprehending the infinite spirit sufficiently to constitute personality recognition. Any ascendant pilgrim on paradise can discern the geographic or locational presence of the Trinity. The great majority are able to contact the intellectual reality of the deities, especially the third person. But not all can recognize or even partially comprehend the reality of the spiritual presence of the Father and the Son. Still more difficult is even the minimum spiritual comprehension of the universal Father.
Okay, so re-stressing and giving you, spreading out some of the thoughts, you know, the difficult task of recognizing, discerning, and comprehending. You know, again, see, it's all mindal here, not will. Do you actually have this, the kind of self that can do this? Not do you have the kind of will that wants to do this? Do you actually have the self that can achieve this? That again, you know, just so you had to picture that. They plop you on the Isle of Paradise, and you turn 360 degrees around to see what you can see. Basically nothing except in this one direction, off in the distance, is this definitive glow, a radiance that is, you know, all-compelling, the glow of the functioning of the Paradise Trinity. You know, they don't have to point you in which direction is the center of the Isle of Paradise. It's completely obvious what direction that, you know, you need to start walking. The trick is when you get up to the center there to somehow be able to get through that functioning of the Trinity that is so incredibly glowing, especially when you get right there. You imagine the radiance, you know, just totally blinding. Can you penetrate that fog of spiritual luminosity, you know, through that incredible radiance? Can you actually see that there's something on the other side? Yeah. And again, just, you know, even though they will occasionally throw in the Eternal Son, the Universal Father, because they're reminding you, you know, you're not just trying to get a self related to their deity. In other words, got self related to a self. You know, the personalized self of God is personalized deity. Okay, you're not just trying to bring that mindal self into relationship to that deity. Once you achieve that, you're actually going to try to have a personality link to the personalized deity, you know, say the Universal Father. Okay. But you notice most of it is stressing all the difficult part. The personality part at the end is not hard. The trick is to get your mind to have enough relationship to deity that you can get to the person. That's the tricky part. Okay. And so they're constantly saying just the Father, the Son, is just the deity. You know, not the person. All right.
Seldom does the quest for the infinite spirit fail of consummation. And when their subjects have succeeded in this phase of the deity adventure, the Trinity guides prepare to transfer them to the ministry of the Sun Finders on the fourth circuit of circle of Havona.
Wait, just keep going here.
Eight, the Sun Finders. The fourth Havona circuit is sometimes called the Circuit of the Suns. From the worlds of this circuit, the ascending pilgrims go to paradise to achieve an understanding contact with the eternal sun. While on the worlds of this circuit, the descending pilgrims achieve a new comprehension of the nature and mission of the creator sons of time and space. There are seven worlds in this circuit on which the reserve corps of the Paradise Michaels maintain special service schools of mutual ministry to both the ascending and descending pilgrims. And it is on these worlds of the Michael sons that the pilgrims of time and the pilgrims of eternity arrive at their first truly mutual understanding of one another. In many respects, the experiences of this circuit are the most intriguing of the entire Havona sojourn.
Okay, now just there's a whole, I mean, just think about that last sentence. It's like, wait a minute, I know what the next thing is. The next one, I'm going to find the Father. Really? You know? Just think about it. In many respects, the experience of this circuit are the most intriguing of the entire Havana sojourn. What is so amazing? You know, in many ways, this transcending finding the Father in your as you reflect back on it. It's what, you know, notice they brought in the descending pilgrims here, again, in very little terms, told you what they were up to on this circuit. Because which circuit is there? Seven circuits. This is the fourth. In other words, it's the middle, right? You're at the midpoint. And the pilgrims of time are coming into the most intimate relationship with the pilgrims of eternity. Time is striking step with eternity. And who makes that possible? What does it say? Creator sons, right? Creator sons, Paradise Michaels, who are the living links between time and eternity. There's only one being that can plug time, the pilgrims of time and the pilgrims of eternity together on this fourth circle. The living links between time and eternity. You know, when Jesus said, you know, that, you know, or, you know, said, you know, you could say of him that he's a living link between time and eternity. Okay, it's just harking back here. That's what a creator son can bring two or more beings together in relation, because they are, unlike the Father, which just relates to each as an individual. The Father can't be the living link between you as a pilgrim of time and a pilgrim of eternity. He relates to each of you as if the other one didn't exist. Okay? But a creator son relates to the two of you together. And coincidentally, he's exactly the kind of link that you need. The link that links time to eternity. The living links between time and eternity. Right there they are, doing what they are. Just their nature is they are the living links. They put themselves in between the two of you and you are plugged together. Okay, really cool stuff. All right, so you know, like I said, I mean, you know, you can see that they're giving you practically every clue they can for you to be able to come up with what the descending pilgrims are doing on each circuit. You know, practically giving you the names in several cases, and because if you get to that point when you want to really start thinking about the whole picture in there. Yeah, you need to really flesh out what those descending pilgrims would do so you can see how you're striking step with that, because you're doing it the whole way, and they are with you. All right, so, that one kind of comes out of the blue. You know, you're reading along, all of a sudden there's Paradise Michaels, you know, and you know, little details like seven worlds, you know, I don't know why seven, you know, there's a lot of worlds on this circuit. A lot of worlds. Seven of them, you know, are where they plug in. Little tidbits like that, that probably 500 years from now someone will figure out how you understand that. But right now, no.
The Sun Finders are the superaphic ministers to the ascending mortals of the Fourth Circuit. In addition to the general work of preparing their candidates for a realization of the Trinity relationships of the Eternal Son, these Son Finders must so fully instruct their subjects that they will be wholly successful. First, in the adequate spiritual comprehension of the Son. Second, in the satisfactory personality recognition of the Son. And third, in the proper differentiation of the Son from the personality of the Infinite Spirit.
All right, so just take them in reverse order. See, so you're penetrating, and the first thing you have to do is try to separate the Spirit from the Son. Okay, and once you get it separated, you know, it's like, okay, there's something different here. Then you've got to come into relationship with more precision in two ways. Because on the one hand, what you're trying to engage, when they say satisfactory personality recognition of the Son, the second source and center is the personality absolute. So there's that aspect. But then, yeah, and it's, you know, the absolute again, of course, see. But the other one is, you know, the adequate spiritual comprehension of the Son. Because besides being the personality absolute, the second source and center is also the absolute Spirit. Okay, so you got to separate, you know, get the fog of the infinite Spirit, if you will, out of the way, and actually penetrate through and see what's behind, you know, and then you have to try to sort it out a bit, because you're not just wanting to bring your mind, old spiritual self into relationship with the absolute Spirit, you also want to have that final endpoint of actually engaging the person, the eternal Son, who is the personality absolute. Pretty amazing person to actually, you know, get a definitive recognition of. All right. Let's see. The thing to remember, we're going to use it when we go forward here. Curious little thing they threw in there. See, preparing their candidates for a realization of the Trinity relationships of the Eternal Son. Why? Why the Trinity relationships of the Eternal Son? You'll see as we go forward here.
After the attainment of the Infinite Spirit, no more examinations are conducted. The tests of the inner circles are the performances of the pilgrim candidates when in the embrace of the enshroudment of the deities. Advancement is determined purely by the spirituality of the individual, and no one but the gods presume to pass upon this possession. In the event of failure, no reasons are ever assigned. Neither are the candidates themselves nor their various tutors and guides ever chided or criticized. On Paradise, disappointment is never regarded as defeat. Postponement is never looked upon as disgrace. The apparent failures of time are never confused with the significant delays of eternity.
And that last, now that's the point, is they're going to stress at the end of the next paragraph. We've come up against a significant delay of eternity. You're attempting to achieve a relationship with the circle of eternity, you know, in the bigger picture here. And you've discovered that you fundamentally lack something significant. It doesn't matter how much you want to do it, you can't. You know, with all the help that's there, you're missing a component. So, you know, no one confuses, like, not you, it's not like you got everything it takes, but you just weren't up to the task, or your guides weren't up to the task of helping you, or something like that. It's not literally a failure, even though it appears that way. You know, it's something more fundamental. All right, and then this next one is where, you know, we get to really think about where these significant delays come from. What's the fundamental fact that's in play about not your personality, not your will, but about your mindful self that is coming up short occasionally for some of these individuals? Why is the selfhood lacking something? No, actually, if you start on your ranch, you never fail. But let's figure out what it is. What's the fundamental thing that's going on here?
Okay. Not many pilgrims experience the delay of seeming failure in the deity adventure. Nearly all attain the infinite spirit, though occasionally a pilgrim from Super Universe Number 1 does not succeed on the first attempt. The pilgrims who attain the Spirit seldom fail in finding the Son. Of those who do fail on the first adventure, almost all hail from Super Universes 3 and 5. The great majority of those who fail on the first adventure to attain the Father, after finding both the Spirit and the Son, hail from Super Universe number 6, though a few from numbers 2 and 3 are likewise unsuccessful. And all this seems clearly to indicate that there is some good and sufficient reason for these apparent failures, in reality, simply unescapable delays.
Like I said, see at the end. Okay, they're simply unescapable delays. They're unescapable because of the nature of yourself in relationship to Didi. Remember, this is not a God adventure so that, you know, your will can get it done. This is a deity adventure, like they keep saying over and over and over. It's about the nature of your selfhood when it gets to this point. And so take it a step. Yeah, and they didn't mention because, and you'll see why, right? Everyone from Orvinton always succeeds on the first attempt. But why? You know, why do they say at the end, and all this seems clearly to indicate, well, clearly how? I mean, you got to sort it out and understand why it's clear. Okay, so nearly all attain the infinite spirit, though occasionally a pilgrim from Super Universe number 1 does not succeed on the first attempt. Okay, remember, we're on a deity adventure. And there's 7 different down-stepped expressions of deity around the 7 super universes. In the first super universe, that's the Father. Not the Father at that infinite level or whatever, but a down-stepped expression of that type of deity, personalized as the first master spirit. You know, so when you think about those 7 different association deity associations that are personalized as the 7 master spirits. Okay, get the order, you know, spend some time getting this drilled in your head so you can think about it. It's easy to remember. So you go first, second, third super universe. It's just simply in the order that you would expect. The Father, the Son, the Spirit. Okay. And then next, you've got the 3 where there's 2 different, you know, facets of deity and association. And again, it starts with the Father. So the first 2 pairs are the ones that have the Father in the pair. And the pair with the Son is going to be first. So the 4th one is Father, Son. The 5th one is Father, Spirit. Okay. Then the 6th one is the one without the Father, the Son, Spirit. Okay. And then the 7th is the Father, the Son, the Spirit. Again, those 3 types of deity, you know, so the Master Spirit number 7 of Orvinton, you know, has an association down, an association of downstepped expressions of Father type, Son type, Spirit type deity wrapped around, you know, encompassed by personality. Okay, so if you're from Super Universe number 7, like we are, by nature, you have a relationship to Father-type deity, Son-type deity, and Spirit-type deity. So you're going to be successful in finding Spirit-type deity, and then Son-type deity, and then Father-type deity. You have the deity that it takes by nature. Now, of course, right now, it's not much, you know, there's not much actuality, of course, but that's the whole point. You've gotten to the level where you can fully actualize that potential that you have coming from Super Universe number 7. Okay, so you look at, so who fails in finding the infinite spirit? So when you know, just thinking about number 7, it's like, oh, okay, well, it must be, if you can't find the spirit, you must have come from a super universe that doesn't have the spirit. It's like, well, but not quite. It says the only ones that fail are the ones that are from Super Universe number 1. It's like, well, okay, that seems obvious. It's just the Father. They might fail occasionally to find the spirit. But what about Super Universe number 2 or Super Universe number 4? You know, that doesn't, those don't have the spirit. Why do they succeed? Always. When they didn't start out directly with the spirit type. Okay, the rest of this paragraph will go straightforwardly, but this first one about finding the spirit is the trickier one. Because remember, what was the previous section? Was it the spirit guides? No, it was the Trinity guides. In order to get to the spirit, you have to get to the spirit through the Trinity. And in terms of experiential deity, the type of deity that stems from the Paradise Trinity is the Mother. The Eternal Son and the Infinite Spirit, just, you know, merely as those expressions, are existential beings. But both of them acquired experiential deity from the Paradise Trinity, from relationship to the Paradise Trinity, through their experiences in Havana, way back before time began, basically, and became the Eternal Mother Son and the Infinite Mother Spirit. They both have Trinity-like, you know, Trinity-related deity within their nature, mother-type deity, okay? And, you know, if you just look at those two mother facts in the hierarchy, you know, paralleling the sevenfold, who's on top? You know, you don't want to go by the adjective, or you might think of putting the infinite adjective, the infinite mother spirit, on top. No. The Eternal Mother Son is above the Infinite Mother Spirit because the mother deity of the Eternal Mother Son is more transcendent type of mother deity. Again, you know, all these details you have to work out. Just take, I'm just going to say it, not try to, you know, validate that statement. But you can just see it ends up, you know, reflected in the chart here that the Eternal Mother Son is a more transcendent mother deity than the Infinite Mother Spirit in terms of the mother deity. Okay, so think about that. If you have a relationship to the Son, like you do in Superuniverse number 2, or Superuniverse number, can someone tell me? 4, right? right. But, you know, if you're trying to figure out why those ones that don't have the Spirit, you know, they have a relationship to the Son and hence the Mother Son, okay? And hence they have a relationship to Mother Deity that's transcendent to the Mother Deity and the Infinite Mother Spirit. So they have a relationship to the Mother Deity and the Infinite Spirit. They have the relationship to the Son, to the Spirit, I mean, because they have a relationship to the Son, see, through the Mother Deity. That's why they see, I told you, they gave you this clue. The realization, see, not the recognition, the realization, you have to get a relationship to this Mother Deity, the realization of the Trinity relationships of the Eternal Son. You have to come into the Eternal Mother Son part, so if you, especially if you're from Superuniverse 2 or 4, so that you won't fail to find the Spirit. Because you don't just have the Spirit by nature, you're getting it indirectly through the Mother. So that's the sneaky one. And that's, you know, it's so sneaky so that they knew they needed to kind of throw in a clue there. So that you.
Some from the Father don't make it.
Right, but the Father one is clear. And also in this regard, just think about the Father type deity, you know, it's the individuality of the parts. You know, and you're trying to penetrate through this more unity-like character to get to that incredibly transcendent individuality, that just you and the Father relationship, nothing there but the two, you know, just absolute individuality of that relationship. Okay. All right, so that's why only the first superuniverse beings occasionally fail, because they don't, you know, because again, if you look in the chart, see, you know, there's something here in that mother column, but you notice it's in gray and I have it as, you know, annotated in brackets. The infinite upholder, you know, is a facet of the Father, but that's not technically mother. When you get up to the infinite upholder, you've gone above the upholders that are literally mother. You've actually gone above father and mother. The infinite upholder is up at the infinite level, which is transcendent of father-mother stuff. Okay, so you can't use that to somehow, it isn't literally mother deity that can get you connected to the Spirit. So those beings from the first superuniverse don't have that sort of backdoor way in. So they occasionally don't make it. Now think about, it's very straightforward when you think about the next one. Okay, so the ones that fail to find the Son, they find the Spirit, they fail to find the Son. It says, they hail from Super universes 3 and 5, well, almost all hail. So this is, just think about it. Of the 7 super universes, the most straightforward reason why they wouldn't find the sun is if they don't have that sun deity in their nature. Well, super universe number 1 doesn't have the sun, it just has the father. Oh, that's the one they did. That's the rest of the almost. See? Okay? Sometimes, the super universe number 1s fail either on the spirit or the sun because they don't have either of them by nature. But then, 2's got the sun, so they're always going to find it. 3 just has the spirit. Yeah. Sometimes they're not going to find the sun. 4, father, son. No, they're going to find the sun. 5, father, spirit. Oh, yeah. They might fail. 6, son, spirit. No, they're going to find the son. 7, father, son, spirit. Yeah, they're going to find the son. So, it's just 1, 3, and 5. Occasionally, you're not going to find the son because that's the nature of their master spirit. And even though you've been birthed out of that womb at this point in your journey, like we said, to become a graduate spirit, you still embody that heritage. Okay? And then the next one. What those who fail to find the father... after finding both the spirit and the son, hail from super universe number 6, though a few from numbers 2 and 3. Again, we don't have to go around again. It's just simply, 2 doesn't have the father, 3 doesn't have the father, 6 doesn't have the father. Right, that's why they say all this clearly. But it's only totally clear if you bring the mother in, because there's that little, there's that catch. But the other two are very clear. That's why. So they're going to need to go out and get some relationship in one of the other super universes. Like if you can't find the sun, you need to go to one of the super universes that has the sun aspect in its nature, the place, and acquire that experiential nature. And then come back and then you'll be successful.
That's why they go to the other super
universe. Right. Right, you got it. And so when when you get assigned, you can obviously do part of this assignment. You know which ones they're not going to be sent to. More of the same that you already had that didn't make it. Right. Yeah.
So particular Vontan could just be the halfway house for all the.
Yeah. I guess you could just go dip yourself in Super Universe Number 7 for a while.
Go soak over in South.
All right. So that's the that's a fun little thing. So the fact that you can sort that, it's like, oh wow, I think I'm actually understanding this. It's kind of complicated, but you can put it together. It's understandable. It's clear.
Chris.
Yep. Yep. Oh, I'm sorry, Tom.
Oh, no, it's cool. So Super Universe 7 is would be the least likely for failure. So what I'm wondering is, why of all places did the Lucifer Rebellion happen here?
Well, of course, there's a lot of rebellions in a lot of places, but it's not just the Lucifer Rebellion, for one thing. But notice how, basically your question is allowing you to recognize what a different thing we're talking about here. It's one thing for lowly, ignorant beings like Lenonadec sons or angels or us or whatnot to not see and fall into error and evil, sin and iniquity. But we're now talking about, you're way, way beyond those sorts of simple limitations. So now maybe a question that's kind of a little bit more combining your thought with what we're doing here and thinking about Super Universe number 7 having the Father, the Son, and the Spirit is in terms of when the Lucifer Rebellion broke out, they tell you that the Ancients of Days gave Michael permission to end it immediately if he wanted to, but he didn't. Think about, that would be a very father-like thing to do. They tell you, the super fathers, the Ancients of Days, said, you can just do the father fiat thing. You have permission. Just end it now. And he didn't. if it had been Super Universe number one, it's all about the Father, you know, the Father's, just the pure Father's will, not the other things coming in, probably ends just like that in Super Universe number one. Okay, but here, it's different. In this context, you have seven different distinct wills in the seven super universes. Super Universe number one is ruled by a downstepped expression of father-like will. Super Universe number seven is ruled by a downstepped expression of father-son spirit type will. And you're going, well, what the heck is that? Yeah. but it is, you know. We can get off on a false tangent a little bit when we're thinking just about, like, Jesus, for instance, encouraging us, you know, to consecrate our will to the perfect will of God the Father. Why? Because no matter what super universe you're in, the Father's the initiator, and you have to consecrate yourself to starting. Okay? But once you start, now you start, you know, you've got yourself going with the universal Father, but now you're in a certain super universe, and you have to consecrate your mind to the only mind at large that you can consecrate it to, the mind in your particular super universe, which is encompassed by a certain will, which in our case is not just a downstepped expression of the will of the Father. That's super universe number one. The kind of mind in this super universe is different than that downstepped expression of father-like mind or something like that, you think. It's a very different type of will, see, at large, that you're consecrating to. And what you discover is, in that sort of a space, mercy can definitely play out with a Lucifer rebellion, where you can be highly suspicious that probably doesn't happen in Super Universe number one. And then when you think about that, no wonder you go, maybe it's not so surprising at all that Grand Fanda, the first mortal to make it to Avona, came from Super Universe number one. Because even though in Super Universe number one, you still have individuals that can delay themselves by poor choices. But you don't have any environmental delays or retardation. If that's a super universe where it's, you know, automatically, instantaneously and automatically put an end to it, you don't have to slog through an environment that's holding you back. You only can hold yourself back. And so if you aren't holding yourself back, you can go to the head of the class pretty, you know. So see, I think you can sort of indirectly recognize that this is most likely what's going on in super universe number one. Yeah, okay.
I just have a couple things. I just want to say quickly. I think I'm speaking in terms of Lucifer, something that's been kind of, you know, just hanging out and waiting maybe for some time. It's hard not to be bitter, I would imagine, if I haven't been there. But I imagine they see the world in a very different way.
For those on the webinar, maybe we couldn't get the gist of that. You have this. When we bring up the Lucifer Rebellion, we recognize we have this context that we live in. We have no choice. We're born in this context of the Lucifer Rebellion. But the spirit, I think, of what you're getting at there is that there is, can you recognize that there's great opportunity in the midst of that to minister to those in need? When you think about that, picturing that first super universe like we are, you know, speculating that it might be, there's going to be less opportunity. It's going to be a little bit more Havona-like in that sense. You go to Havona, you don't have any, there isn't any great problems like the Lucifer Rebellion that you can help someone in the midst of. It's a perfect place. You know, and in a sense, the first super universe it would be that part of Avona expressed down as a super universe. You know, we have another part of Avona expressed here. We don't have that sort of everything is run, you know, nice and tight and straightforward. And you get the sense that of all the super universes, the way they talk about us, this is the super universe that has the greatest opportunity for the inevitabilities to be in play. You may end up being one of the slowest ascenders through your super universe because of that. But see, is it a coincidence when you think about it that way that of the seven schemes that are in the universe of universes, the ascension scheme is the dominant one here? Because, see, in that mode of thinking, it would be the super universe that offers the greatest opportunity for an ascender to do something besides just be a bullet, you know, screaming through the super universe, but to actually engage laterally with all these things that are in need. Yeah, Jason.
Okay, I can sound pretty much tangible, hopefully. If the first super universe has the first ascender, mm-hmm. we imagine
the infamous Omega Man, yes.
John
the Baptist, now you're really speculating.
The opportunity Jesus gave.
So, obviously, that, you know, opens up that speculation. I mean, see, you can, and you can see how you could. Oh, just yeah, for the people in the webinar, just he's wondering if Super Universe Number One. Yeah, you know, has the first one. Is Super Universe Number 7 going to have the last ascender? You know, yeah. Obviously, you can't say with any certainty. Yeah. But you can wonder, you know, if maybe it's not something that simple as the last ascender, but it might very well be that Super Universe Number 7 sort of has that last little keystone that drops into place, you know, that it's kind of that final anchor point, because after all, that's probably why some of the revelators speculate that when the grand universe is settled in light and life, the supreme being will actually have residence on Orvinton, see, that it's that final, you know, keystone anchor point. So yeah, see, you can reasonably speculate along those lines. All right, let's keep going here. Let's see, where were we?
Candidates for the deity adventure.
Oh, they said deity adventure again, didn't they?
Are placed under the jurisdiction of the chiefs of assignment, a group of primary supernifim, and are remanded to the work of the realms of space for a period of not less than one millennium. They never return to the super universe of their nativity, always to that super creation most propitious for their retraining and preparation for the second deity adventure. Following this service on their own motion, they return to the outer circle of Havona, are immediately escorted to the circle of their interrupted career, and at once resume their preparations for the deity adventure. Never do the secondary supernifim fail to pilot their subjects successfully on the second attempt, and the same superaphic ministers and other guides always attend these candidates during this second adventure.
So they never fail because the chiefs of assignment are not clueless, okay? All right, yeah, you are well assigned. And assignment almost doesn't seem to be quite a strong enough word. You know, they say remanded. You are ordered back to a particular super universe. Pretty strong language. Thou shalt go back to Super Universe Number 4.
How long is a millennium?
Okay, yeah, that's what I was just going to bring up. Now, I want, yeah, this, because this is a very important point related to what you were talking about earlier, how long it takes you to get to this deity adventure in the first place, okay? Okay, remember, we're talking about Paradise Havona time, okay? A day is 1,000 of our years. 100 days make a year. 1,000 years make a millennium. So how many of our years are we talking here? 100 million years. So you are ordered back for a period not less than 100 million years in another super universe. Okay, so just take that on its face value, you know, and so 100 million years later, let's say, you get back, and the same superaphic ministers and other guides always attend these candidates during the second adventure.
We're still here.
Yeah, 100 million years later, you know.
Dang.
They're right there waiting for you. Yeah. Okay.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. Obviously, patience takes on a whole new meaning, you know, in this sort of scope of time.
You know, how short this little trip is.
Right, right. This little trip here, right, that brings in that truth. But just related to the ascension. See, if you're, you know, if a brief little stint out in another super universe to pick up this tiny little deficit that you missed requires not less than 100 million years, how long likely does it take you to get through the whole thing in the first place if sort of a small measure of that whole time is 100 million years? You know, it's going to take you quite a while to ascend from this lowly world to the portals of the central universe. So just sit back and go for the long.
Or another cup.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the more significant little clues they give you in the whole book about just how long this might take you to get there. That a snippet of it is 100 million years. Yeah.
They do mention a little bit in another place where they talk about someone who came from a rebellion.
Right.
You know, there was here, there was really only a few hundred million years ago. So that was probably just.
The first inhabited worlds in Nebadon are how old? Does anyone remember?
200 billion.
Yeah. Okay, see, so that's, you know, 100 million, you know, is, you know, you'd think that for it to be thought of as small, 100 million would have to be a factor of 1,000. So 100 billion, see, that would make it, you know.
That'd be quick, I think, 100 billion.
See, and that may be. See, it may very well be quite quick.
Years, it may. You know, yeah. Wow,
yeah. If you have a loosey-goosey super universe where there's lots of retardation and delay, right.
You
know, yeah, I mean, you might want to start thinking like the number trillion or something like that. You know, and then, of course, you know, you get to the central universe, and you've got a billion gigantic worlds with an insane amount of stuff on every one of them that you can, anyway, I mean, it's just, right, it's huge. Right.
Time is meaningless.
You know,
Fonda has the speed records.
But, you know, definitely, you know, you will look, I mean, it won't be like, well, I'm just going to go out there for 5 minutes and then come back. I mean, 100 million years, even at this stage, is going to be a significant chunk of time. It's just, you know, it won't be like it is for us now. We'll have just so much more patience in our relationship to time at that point that, you know, it won't be, oh my gosh, it's been 100 years now. It's like, you know, you just won't, you know, you'll be totally settled and cool with it. Okay, so why don't we see if we can do the Father Guides here too to kind of wrap up the three here.
Nine, the Father Guides. When the pilgrim's soul attains the third circle of Havona, he comes under the tutelage of the Father Guides, the older, highly skilled, and most experienced of the superaphic ministers. On the worlds of this circuit, the Father Guides maintain schools of wisdom and colleges of technique, wherein all the beings inhabiting the central universe serve as teachers. Nothing is neglected which would be of service to a creature of time on this transcendent adventure of eternity attainment. The attainment of the Universal Father is the passport to eternity, notwithstanding the remaining circuits to be traversed. It is therefore a momentous occasion on the pilot world of circuit number 3 when the transit trio announce that the last adventure of time is about to ensue, that another creature of space seeks entry to paradise through the portals of eternity.
Let's see, maybe just pause there for a second. So this momentous, you know, occasion, you know, just remember what's in play in terms of the magnitude. Another way to look at the stages to get from here to being a finaliter are those jubilees. Remember? And there's 7 of them, you know, the 7th one being when you're inducted into the core of the finality. When you find the Father, that's one of the jubilees. It's 5th, yeah. Yeah, you have the first one, and then they come in pairs. Let's not talk about number 1 because it's complicated. But it's, you know, these pairs, You have waking up in the Maranatha life and infusing in the Maranatha life. That's the first pair. And then you have waking up in Havona and finding the Father in Havona. Oh, it's kind of similar, you know, fusing with the Father fragment. See? And then you have waking up on paradise and inducted in the core of the finality. You know, so those are those pairs of jubilees. Yeah, so this is, you know, from that perspective, you can see this is going to be a really big deal. They're going to, you know, put the word out to the whole universe of universes that another mortal has achieved, you know, the fifth jubilee. Yeah.
The test of time is almost over. The race for eternity has been all but run. The days of uncertainty are ending. The temptation to doubt is vanishing. The injunction to be perfect has been obeyed. From the very bottom of intelligent existence, the creature of time and material personality has ascended the evolutionary spheres of space, thus proving the feasibility of the ascension plan while forever demonstrating the justice and righteousness of the command of the Universal Father to his lowly creatures of the worlds, be you perfect, even as I am perfect. Step by step, life by life, world by world, the ascendant career has been mastered, and the goal of deity has been attained. Survival is complete in perfection, and perfection is replete in the supremacy of divinity. Time is lost in eternity. Space is swallowed up in worshipful identity and harmony with the Universal Father. The broadcasts of Havona flash forth the space reports of glory, the good news that is that in very truth the conscientious creatures of animal nature and material origin have, through evolutionary ascension, become in reality and eternally the perfected sons of God.
I wanted her to just read because they're, you know, they're doing the little poetic flourish there before we, you know, paused a little bit and then unpacked it. You know, you see, the broadcasts of Havona flash forth. See, that's that fifth jubilee. Yeah, so very literally. You know, you have to chuckle in the midst of, you know, how exciting it is to take in the power of that poetry. You know, in the midst of the poetry, you know, they remind you from the very bottom. Okay. And there was another one too. Where did they do that? Yeah, something about the lowliest. Didn't they say that too somewhere in there?
Animal nature.
You know. Wait. Notice when they do that. That's with very, you know, much purpose. They're always concerned. Like Jesus was always very concerned about spiritual pride, about pride. You know, which is a spiritual thought. In the midst of the grandeur of what we're reading about here, and the poetry that they want to give you, you know, so to appreciate why the broadcasts would light up and tell the whole universe what you've done, which, you know, is because you could lose your humility here in this lowly life with such revelation. So they want to very poignantly remind you there isn't anything lower than you right now, okay? Don't get a big head about this. You know, Jesus was so cautious about this. You know, every time he'd give them just a little glimmer of spiritual excitement, you know, he'd poke that in them, remind them, and, you know, and if you grab a hold of that, the next step is iniquity and the end of you. You know, and it's like, wow, that kind of broke the spirit of the moment, Jesus. but he wants, you know, it's very important that when you allow your spiritual consciousness to feel that kind of poetry, that it's done in the midst of the most humility that you can muster, lest it be your undoing.
Yeah. I was surprised about the temptation to doubt. Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I would think by then you wouldn't be tempted to doubt anymore, but that's kind of interesting. Even at that stage, you still have the potential to doubt.
And that's tied to what you do on the inner two circuits, actually, the fact that that it says vanishing, you have a lot of, like I said, very intense, precise getting a hold of yourself to do yet. It's vanishing. I mean, to be able to find the Father, you've gotten your limitations down to a pretty small little nugget now. But you've got that arduous climb yet to take it all the way to the absolute existential level. You didn't need that direct relationship to the absolute existential level where it is vanished. It's absolutely vanished instead of just vanishing. You didn't need that absoluteness to find the Father. You can find the Father through supremacy. To get to the point where you have it totally perfected, you know, where it's vanished, you got the rest of the way to go yet. You got to take it the rest of the way up. And see, and there's, you know, obviously it's not the kind of lowly doubt like you, I'm sure you may be thinking, you know, you just reminded us a couple times tonight. You know, it's not the kind of immediate doubt that we would think of here in this life, you know, that faint flicker of faith is trying to somehow, you know, assuage, you know, trying to constantly, you know, militate against. I mean, it's just a simple fact that you can see that there's a nugget that hasn't been taken all the way to the perfect point yet. Until you can see that there's nothing left to perfect, you know, you wonder. It's like, well, can I actually get that last little bit? Because especially the smaller it gets, the more you're starting to appreciate, the harder it is to get it down another notch. the climb just gets steeper and steeper and steeper. And that last little nugget takes the greatest effort you ever did to take it that last nanometer and make it vanish, that last little dot. So yeah, that's what they're getting at. You're perfecting every moment until you're finally perfect. It's ing. There's always an ing. It's vanishing up to that last moment when it's vanished. It's not unlike when you think about getting towards fusion. I mean, until you literally fuse, until that instant when you fuse, the instant before, you could choose iniquity still. The opportunity to choose iniquity is vanishing. It's getting really, really tiny that last second before you fuse, but it's not gone. It's still there. It's real. You could stop in that last second, go sideways and down the hole.
I can't even understand that thought.
I know.
About choosing iniquity even now.
Which is a good thing. I wouldn't suggest going to school on those thoughts.
The Creator Son can. Yeah. They have provisions in case a Creator Son should rebel. Not because they ever do or ever would, just because it's technically has to be there.
Right. Yeah, they wouldn't have free will if it technically wasn't there. You wouldn't have free will if it technically wasn't a possibility to choose iniquity the 1 second before. You would have not quite free will. You know, that last little step, you get pushed. No, every single step has to be your wholehearted choice, or it's not free. Period. Yeah. And, you know, that whole bit about, I just can't understand why someone would go that route. Like I said, I wouldn't suggest going to school on that. Think about the bigger context of that. You know, for up until Jesus came, humans spent a lot of time contemplating salvation, trying to understand, well, what gets you salvation and what gets you damnation. They spent endless hours going to school on iniquity, you know, and the fear of it, and The good news of 2,000 years ago is you do not have to study that anymore. Your salvation out of this mortal life is by grace. You don't have to study the rules of salvation anymore. You don't have to know the prerequisites of a just or indwelling anymore. You know, in terms of your salvation. You know, I want to understand them to have a better understanding of the laws of spirit substance and stuff like that. But those prerequisites have been overruled. There's a new law in play for you. You don't have to study salvation anymore and iniquity, you know, the flip side of it, damnation. It's a gift of grace. Know that and cease to think about that anymore. Let go of where we were 4,000 years ago that Machaventa couldn't reach. So all they could think about, you know, was salvation. You know, and also, you know, getting their material needs back met by the magical God and praying fervently for it. But, you know, they wanted someone to give them the keys to salvation. You know, that was their whole religious quest. You don't have to study that anymore. You don't have to figure out what it takes to be saved anymore. Put an end to that thought in your mind. Take a hold of the faith and the trust that's built upon the good news of the bestowal of the Spirit of Truth. You have a thought adjuster. You have a soul. No matter how clueless you are, you're going to go to the next life. So now set about the next step. The next step after that third epical revelation of trust and faith is to see if you can figure out some of that love and service that Jesus tried to demonstrate in the fourth epical revelation. You can't really love or serve like he was talking about if you don't have trust. You can't just do it with faith. You got to solidify that faith. That spiritual faith has to become a soul trust. You have to stand on that rock before you can really love and serve like he wants you to. The kind of love you can and service you can do without that trust, without being predicated on that trust, is basically delusional. You know, I mean, if you think that you're doing the fourth epical thing, you're not. If you're still struggling, you know, trying to get your faith to antidote your fear, if you do not yet trust, you can't really love and serve. You can do the shadow cast by love and service down into the plane where you dwell, but you can't go up to where it really is on the sixth level of meaning and really love and serve. And if you can't really love and serve yet, how can you get to the fifth epical revelation? How can you get to what goes beyond God? Like, we're, you know, next, you know, that's the segue to next week. We're going to leave the third circuit next week and go to the second. And the first thing I'm going to tell you, well, now you're going to go beyond finding the Father. You're going to go above and beyond finding the Father. You're like, huh? I thought that's all there was. No, that's just a mere tiny beginning. What lies beyond that personal connection to the source of personality, God the Father, is a relationship with deity. And that seventh jubilee, where you take an oath to the Paradise Trinity, which is not personality, which is the Paradise Trinity that's above the Father. You've achieved that. And the broadcasts declare that you have now risen up to that higher level in direct relationship to the Paradise Trinity, and you profess to be in eternal service to that higher fact, that deity fact, in the same way the Father did before time began. He put himself in subordination to the Paradise Trinity. Yeah, it tells you that directly in the Jesus Papers, at the beginning of the Jesus Papers, that it says that the Father put himself in cooperative, because he has will, cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity, and that's how it all started. If he didn't put himself in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity, if he said, no way, it's mine, then there wouldn't be anything. All there would be is the I Am, or God the Infinite, you know, in that existential sense. He has to subordinate himself to the one deity fact that actually touches reality, so that that reality isn't just within him. Now, and Michael, in trying to go through the seven bestowals, that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to do what the Father did before time began, put himself in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. And it takes him seven stages. Those seven, he's aligning himself with the seven different types of will of the seven master spirits, which collectively has a super additive consequence of relationship to the sevenfold spirit, which is directly connected to the Paradise Trinity. He can put, the Father can put himself directly in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. Thus, finite beings like Michael, we can put ourselves in cooperative subordination to the sevenfold spirit, which is the downstepped expression of the Paradise Trinity at the supreme level, basically. That's what it's all about. The Father modeled it in the beginning, and everything else models it afterwards. This cooperative subordination. You know, when you say, it is my will that your will be done, well, what is his will? His will was, I will myself to be in subordination to the Paradise Trinity. That's what his will has done. Not just my will as God the Infinite. I'm going to subordinate myself so that there's a way for more than me. The first step was for this self-me to humble himself. And everything else has to humble itself in kind. You know, when it says, be you perfect even as I am perfect, that's part of his perfection, that perfect cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. That's the fifth epical revelation. And you only have the courage and the capacity to begin to think about that when you've taken care of the self, trust, and faith, and you've brought yourself into a dynamic living relationship with others, love, and service. You got that self established and functioning, and now let's go for the stuff that goes beyond me. Me trusting, me being faithful, me loving, me serving, going beyond me. Right? When we think about the ascension career, you know, that first step on the local system level is really establishing yourself as a Marantxa individuality, a Marantxa me. Right? Then the next step is socializing that, going beyond me. Okay. You know, and you bring it all the way up to a Marantxa unity level. You know, and then you reestablish yourself as a spirit me. And then you progressively let go of that me. You bring that me into cooperative subordination, you know, with that unity above. That's the whole process. So to just bring in, you know, the fullness of what the Father was really commanding when he said, be you perfect. You know, not be that perfect, I am I, and who cares about anything else. That's not the Father. He's not the perfect, I am I. He subordinated himself. Just like Jesus tried to teach his apostles to stop exalting themselves. You know, he will be last shall be first. Because the Father made himself last, and that made himself the first source and center. He wasn't the first source and center until he made himself last.
Yeah.
That's the model. Right. He became the Paradise Father when he said, I will plant my feet on the Paradise Isle, and I will never move them. I will subordinate myself to the Isle. And I will put my head into relationship, in subordinate relationship to the Paradise Trinity above. The Paradise Isle below, the Paradise Trinity above. I will put myself between those two plates. And there I will be, limited between those boundaries. I won't be at all. And you need to do that perfectly, just like I did. And then you will be part eternally between those two constant ceilings and floors. The floor of the Paradise Isle and the ceiling of the Paradise Trinity. Everything exists in eternity between the two. You know, just one more thing, then we'll wrap it up. That's why they're here, the Paradise Isle and the Paradise Trinity. They're in the stasis of deity. It's the stasis. Those are the things that stand unmoved, you know, in paradiseness. And everything puts itself in cooperative, because you have will, subordination to that paradiseness. The fifth epical revelation, an amazing new thought.
If you, once you get to the Paradise Trinity, which is the one above, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Right.
Good.
Right.
Once you get to that one, it was what happened to that mountain?
Actually, if you listen next week, I don't want to. We actually, we need to wrap it up for the people that are on the, we need to wrap it up here, so we can't go on. But, because we end here at 9:30. But hold that thought. If you read forward yourself, or if you listen in next week on the webinar, they start addressing that very question. It's like, well, if I climb all the way up to a mountaintop, that's the question. Well, then what? You'll see they start to talk about that. In this very next section.
You can read an anthem and find out what you want.
Yeah. The key is, your thought is very valid, and you're going to need some help with discovering finding an answer to the now what question. I've gotten to the ceiling, now what? There seems to be nothing. They'll help you to discover a new ceiling. all right, let's take a moment and reflect on things here.